The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, Lord.
As Jesus continued his journey to Jerusalem, he traveled through Samaria and Galilee. As he was entering a village, 10 leopards met him. They stood at a distance from him and raised their voice, saying, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." And when he saw them, he said, "Go, show yourselves to the priest." As they were going, they were cleansed. And one of them, realizing that he had been healed, returned, glorifying God in a loud voice. And he fell at the feet of Jesus and thanked him. He was a Samaritan. Jesus said in reply, 10 were cleansed, were they not? Where are the other 9? Has none but this foreigner returned to give thanks to God?" Then he said to him, "Stand up and go. Your faith has saved you." The Gospel of the Lord.
There are 5 spiritual lessons that I'd like to draw out from the story of Naaman in our first reading from the second book of Kings, chapter 5. Naaman was not an Israelite. He was a general of the kingdom of Syria, also known as Aram, a neighboring nation. Though he was a successful and powerful man, he suffered from a debilitating and embarrassing skin disease, which the Bible calls leprosy, but it could have been a whole range of different things. On one of his raids, he had taken captive an Israelite girl who he had made into his slave. Sympathizing with her new master's suffering, the slave girl suggests that he contact the Israelite prophet Elisha, who could heal his skin condition. So Naaman went to his king and received permission to undertake this journey. When he arrived, laden with gifts at the home of Elisha, the prophet was not home, but sent a messenger to tell Naaman to bathe 7 times in the river Jordan, and he would be clean. Naaman was insulted that Elisha didn't show up himself to effect the cure, but he eventually followed the instructions, and he was cured. So filled with gratitude was Naaman that he took several containers of Israelite soil back to his country that he might worship the true God and him alone on that soil. Now the lessons. Number 1. Naaman is a great man, powerful, influential, certainly a feared and admired man, but he has a flaw, a weakness, a source of shame. Everyone has something like this. No matter how successful or how powerful you might be, there's something in you that hurts, that's weak, that's afraid. Some flaw in you that probably embarrasses you, that you just wish would go away. Read a biography of any famous person. You'll see one in there. The thing is, it's often the fatal flaw that leads us to God, and not the side of us that is powerful and successful. That was certainly true for St. Paul. He begged God 3 times, which is the Bible's way of saying that he asked over and over again, to take what Paul called the thorn in his side away from him. He never says what the thorn was, but it sure sounds like a weakness of some sort. And God responded to Paul, as I'm sure you remember, "My grace is sufficient for you, for in weakness, power reaches perfection." Lesson 1 is that those weak points in us, in God's strange providence, are often what leads us to God, allows us to open ourselves up to Him. So we should not simply wallow in our shame or our weakness, but allow that thing, whatever it is, to open us up to God. The second lesson centers around the slave girl. In the context of an ancient society, it would be hard to imagine anyone lower, less important than a slave girl. Yet, Naaman, the powerful general, took her advice. It might have been born of his own desperation, but really, who cares? When you're struggling spiritually, have the humility to take advice from wherever God sends it. God is shown throughout the Bible as speaking through the weak rather than those in high places. That was certainly true of Jesus, born in a stable, working hard for a living, never having very much of this world's perks. In taking her advice, Naaman travels to Israel to see the prophet. Now, if you read the whole account, the king of Israel is very suspicious of what Naaman actually wants, which is certainly understandable. And so he tries to block Naaman. The third lesson is that we will normally be blocked from the healing that we seek by all kinds of powers and situations. It's part of the tragedy of our fallen, finite world. It was certainly true for the nation of Israel, headed for the Promised Land. There were obstacles everywhere. So the escape route is not an easy one. There will be people and events that will contrive to block our healing. So we, like Naaman, must have the courage to withstand, to persevere, as we struggle to come to spiritual health. The fourth lesson, Naaman is not met by Elisha, but by a messenger. And as I said, Naaman is very put off by this, but finally he submits to the message. The fundamental spiritual problem is pride. The reason we call this one of the seven deadly sins is because so many other sins flow from this one. So if pride is the source of much of our spiritual suffering, then the solution is humility, restraining one's ego. A related spiritual maxim goes like this: the door to becoming a great soul is always low and accessed only through humiliation. Do you want the wide open space of spiritual joy? Then you have to bend low to enter through the humble door. The final lesson here is worship. Naaman's cure doesn't just result in him going back to life unchanged. Now he recognizes in himself the need to worship the one true God. He becomes a confessor of the God of Israel, and he resolves that on the sacred ground that he will bring from Israel for the rest of his life, he will worship this living God. The goal of all spiritual transformation is right worship. All sin born of pride is falling away from right worship. Therefore, the goal of any spiritual healing process is to learn once again to worship. So let us continue our worship.